Welcome back to WD Magicast for the week of April 14th, 2024. This is episode 254. WD Magicast, the show about the mouse, the marvels, the galaxy, and beyond. I'm your host, Matthew Graykin. And this week's show, I am joined by the most uncanny and amazing Isaac as we sit down and discuss X-Men 97. You're halfway through the season, and we think we have a few things to discuss about this episode. We are going to go into a deeper dive. If you're not, we will let you know at what point to pause this episode, finish those episodes, and come back to this episode. I hope that makes sense to you. But yes, we will give you our general spoiler-free review first, give you a warning, and then head into our slightly more deeper dive and spoilery discussion. And on that note, make sure to join our social media where we can be found just about everywhere at WD Magicast on Facebook, Twitter, the X, whatever you want to call it, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can also hear these beautiful episodes on that service as well, especially since Google got rid of their Google Podcasts. That's where you can find it now, all you Google users. And check out our Tee Public store, where you can check out some of our amazing merchandise, t-shirts for the summers, tote bags for the beach, drink holders, beverage holders of your choices, a whole bunch of really fun stuff with our logo all over it. Help your show out, get something cool for yourself over our Tee Public shop. All of these can be found in the show notes as well. And on that bombshell, on with the show. In the early 90s, Fox Kids Network was launched, where Fox was trying to compete with Disney Afternoon and a bunch of these other channels putting out kids programs. Fox, being a newer network, wanted something of their own. And they aligned with Marvel and created a number of different shows. They had a Spider-Man, they had a few other things. You know, this is also based on the success of the Batman series that Warner Brothers was running and syndicating. So Fox had the X-Men, and it was a very well done show, believe it or not. Strangely enough, it was an enjoyable show, and it ran for 5 seasons on the Fox Kids TV network. Eventually things kind of changed within how the production of the show went, and that probably led into the inevitable end of the show, which all good things come to an end. We have to admit to that. And someone who was around in the 90s who is but hasn't come to an end, because he's more than just a good thing, he's a wonderful thing. Isaac is here to discuss with me this X-Men series that Disney has brought back for Disney Plus.
What is happening, people? Yes, yes, yes. I'm back, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you for carbon dating myself back in 1997. Yes, but as Matt has said, yes, I've always been a big fan growing up watching X-Men, just like he did. And
well, when your mutant power is time travel, you know, you can't really carbon date yourself.
No. I think my mutant power is just I don't think I ever age. I still look like the same person I was when I was 5. So I still have this baby face on me. Just a little bit more stubble hair growing between the face. But it's again, it's always a pleasure to be back on WD Deep Podcast. Even though I'm doing things, I'm always thinking about that family out there, Matt and everybody else that listens to this wonderful podcast. So, you know, I'm always happy to always put in my two cents. You guys are always in my mind and in my heart. So I'm always grateful to be back on here.
And so are you.
Yeah,
did you watch the show whenever it was originally airing in the 90s?
Of course. Who did it, man? I mean, it was the cartoons, it was the X-Men, you had that fantastic cartoon Sting that always started the episodes out. Like, it was always good, always got you pumped up when I was a kid. So I also will admit there were certain episodes. Now, I didn't watch all of the episodes growing up. I think they're, as a kid, things tend to kind of blend in. I don't know if you ever had those moments where you'll watch a couple of episodes and go and do something else and come back and watch some more episodes back and then. So I'll admit there were some moments where certain things did blend into, and I'll admit my memory is a little spotty on certain episodes, as does comes to when we do get old. things like, tend to get spotty you're talking a little bit.
30 some years since the show premiered.
Things will be a tad bit spotty, and not everything's going to be accurate in our heads.
That's why we're so lucky to have it available to us on Disney Plus, that we can go back and rewatch these five seasons. Just for context purposes, and I'm not trying to exclude anybody, but for maybe some of our younger listeners who aren't aware of 90s technology, we didn't have DVRs. We couldn't pause TV. We couldn't stream it the next day or later that day. We couldn't find it on YouTube. There was no YouTube. You had to be physically present in your house, and no one else was watching the TV to put it on.
Now, also, this was also back in the time too. Social media was a time where you actually had to talk to the person in front of you and actually be social.
Instead of talking across a computer screen like we are doing now,
yes,
but many miles away, or on the telephone, actually talking on a telephone. The telephones were actually devices used to talk to people, not text people.
Yeah, heck, there was also a back in the day where we had this thing called the beeper. You know, that we didn't have cell phones, we had the beeper. So you sent a couple of messages to your girl, your friends, what you're doing. And that was your form of communicating. That was your form of texting back in the day.
Yes,
so,
yes. So texting that you would text them your phone number or a little message and they would have to call you back.
Yes, that's how it worked. Okay. Now that we've discussed that we're best friends with Jesus, let's get back to the X-Men episode.
One other point to bring up. Oh, yeah. That these shows were Saturday morning cartoons. There was a time and period that Saturday mornings was the time to watch TV as a kid.
That was the truth. From
like 9 o'clock in the morning till about noon, 1 o'clock.
Still in your pajamas.
Still in your pajamas. Your bowl of cereal, your Pop Tarts, Eggo waffle, you name it.
Chilling in bed. On the couch. And you just watch cartoons pretty much all day.
Rest of the family's asleep. You're just there.
All the way into the afternoon, man. It was what a great time to be alive as a kid, man. What a great time to be alive. And like you said, the fact that we have all these great cartoons like X-Men 97. So the fact that now 30 years later, X-Men is coming back with the sequel is incredible. And like you said, it seems like this show also kind of grew up with us in a way in terms of how it was approached. The original created by Bino DiMeo, unfortunately, as you know, not longer the showrunner, really, really actually sat down and it seemed like this show, let's take this old show, but infuse it with the technology, and not only that, the good show writing that has come across other television shows that we know of and implement it into this cartoon. And I think that's where X-Men 97 has really stepped this game up. It's able to still, I'll also come to admit, I was a little concerned about it because I felt like it was a bit, you know, nostalgia is the big thing nowadays. I was a little afraid that it might have been a bit of a cash grab to kind of bring this back up. And I thought this would just be a bit of a novelty act in the way that was presented and what I was heard. But, you know, after going through these five episodes, it is more than that. They're right now off the bat, there's a sense of love. There's a sense of care with these episodes. And most importantly, I think it does such a great job of really highlighting the issues and some of the social commentary that's still relevant today, that was talked about in 97 with the show, especially under like when Stan Lee and Jack Kirby made these characters, and still being brought into the forefront of 2024, still dealing with these same issues, and still kind of bringing it into a very new light, along with the soap drama elements that we do care to be dear to our hearts. So.
This seems to be kind of like more of a passion project for the showrunners, that they're trying to hit it right. And like you said, it is a little more mature than what we had in the 90s, between some of the story themes, between some of the visuals, and even some of the language used. It's a little more PG.
Mm-hmm. No, and I totally agree. And I actually want to kind of ask from your end, and I guess you really did mention that too, because again, when the X-Men came out as a kid, I might have been maybe like 7, 8 when those episodes dropped. So, you know, when you're looking at it in a kid's point of view, you really care more about the characters. You really didn't focus most on the social commentary back when you were a little young. You're more about the characters. What about you? Did you pick up more on that, or were you kind of like me when you really focused on the characters? You were more focused on the cool stuff, you know, and the shiny costumes and the superheroes, the superhero powers and stuff like that. What was your take back being young watching the X-Men?
I am a few years older than you. Around that time, not only did I start watching X-Men, which obviously this is part of Marvel's plan, wherever you put out a TV show that you're trying to, you know, pull people into all your bases. I was also reading the comic books at that time. So I was more aware of some of the political implications of what was being portrayed, more so amongst the equality end, and how we should not treat people who are differently. Mm-hmm. You know, just because someone is better at something, someone does something different, someone sees things differently, someone is born differently than the quote-unquote norm, we should not exclude them, we should not treat them differently, we should not look at it as being less. So that type of stuff did resonate in my mind, not necessarily maybe as the way that the writers or the creators intended it to, but in a way that I was able to relate to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why the X-Men kind of resonated more with me, because I was able to relate to that.
Yeah.
As I mentioned in the past, growing up with a learning disability, especially in the 80s and 90s, where things weren't exactly as inclusive as they are now, that type of stuff resonated a little more with me, that, oh, you know, these these people have these gifts. They were, you know, born differently. This is something that they were just born with. And look at all the amazing things they can do. Look at the things they can accomplish. People do look at down at them. People do make fun of them. But they rise above that and do what's right. Some of them. So that kind of stuff really resonated with me. And that's why I really attached to the X-Men, not so much like the Avengers and that type of stuff. I enjoyed those. I really got into the X-Men. The other thing that I liked about X-Men, and this translated into the animated show as well as the comic books, is that with all the action and all of the drama, they were a family. And then they would show times of them of just downtime, like playing basketball or football in the yard, you know, just walking around the house, cooking dinner, just everyday things. You know, like sitting around watching television, just not like, okay, we have to be superheroes now. No, they're just like kicking it back and relaxing and chilling and just,
yeah,
you know, or you know, the Xavier School for the Talented and Gifted. It's a school that you see the characters in classes.
Uh-huh.
So there was a much more human element that, you know, sometimes you can attach these. And that's one thing that I usually like with Marvels, that you get a lot of that human element. And I just found in X-Men, I saw more of that.
It is a kind of amazing how like how the comic books have translated into the comic books, and how that, like you said, they were able to talk about the political and the social aspects of a comic, you know, really being its archetype of being like the civil rights movement, in terms of how that translated in to use that as kind of the stepping stone with the X-Men, and like you said, the bigotry and equality of just mutants trying to just be normal and just have equal rights in the world, but at the same time be able to show some of that normality, like you said, just downtime of them just trying to get to know these characters, trying to flesh that out, even with their leaders being the kind of like the ideas of both Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, in terms of Professor Magneto and Charles Xavier. With that being said, in terms of those characters, let's talk a little bit about more of the characters coming from your end. And how did you feel in terms of the translate and how those characters were from 97 until now in 2024 as this aired? What takes did you kind of take from certain characters that did you feel kind of got a bit of a glow up this year, or what characters you felt like maybe had stepped down or haven't changed at all? I'm kind of curious about your opinion on certain characters.
Before we get into that, let's rate the show.
Okay.
And we'll get into that, because that's going to get a little more spoilery and more into depth and detail.
Okay. So I'm jumping all over the place. Sorry, y'all. I'm just giddy. I'm just giddy about this show, man. It's just so good.
So, in general, I guess out of 10, what would you rate this show? We're going to realize that, you know, we're only halfway through.
Yeah.
This can all change and stuff.
This is the mid-season of the show. So far, I'm going to give this I'm going to give this a 9. I'm going to give this a 9. I think this, again, I have been incredibly impressed. Again, I went into thinking that this was going to be a novelty grab, cash grab, and because, you know, the X-Men have been dormant now that Disney has gotten the property back from Fox, and I thought this was just going to be their way of just, okay, well, we'll just make a nice little cartoon, you know, we'll tune it up, trying to get the old heads like you and I to come back and watch it. Maybe we'll get a couple of new people to join in. And it's been anything but that. This is definitely a show that's kind of matured with me in terms of incredible writing. And along with the visual effects too, you know, it definitely has gotten a better glow up in terms of the visual effects. And it's also done a really good, not only that, I think this show with, I guess, the budget and the backing of Disney is willing to kind of explore those elements from the comic books that maybe you could never have done back in the day on Fox Kids when it was originally there, because this definitely feels a little bit more mature without not getting too overly graphic or going really into maybe there are certain television shows that do push the boundary of violence. It does, like you say, it is in that PG-13 area, mm-hmm. but it does it so well where you feel like the stakes are incredibly high. I think the show is willing to put and really able to kind of put a lot of stakes in these characters. And I think by doing that, you really have so much of a more better investment into those characters. And it, you know, like you said, back to how you said, I think this is that's just simply due to now us being the people in the writer's chair, writing these characters, but be able to take all those knowledge from all past television shows and really be able to incorporate to make this into a really, really enjoyable watch.
I completely agree with all that. And I too am going to give it a 9 so far. I think as the show progressed through these first 5 episodes, it kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger. I don't think the first 2 episodes I would have given it a 9. I enjoyed them. But as the world grew and you saw the direction that things were heading in, really just kept on getting stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you said, they're incorporating a lot more complexity to the writing, to the story, to the characters, their social dynamics, and it's written for the people who watch the show initially, but not excluding people who are just trying to get into it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So far it's a 9. I mean, that could change today when this episode drops, or whatever the next our episode drops the same day that X-Men 97 episode 6 drops. That could change. But as of now, episodes 1 through 5, and as a whole, I'm giving it a 9.
I agree.
And on that note, this is your spoiler warning. So if you have not watched episodes 1 through 5, please pause us now. Go to Disney Plus now and watch X-Men 97 now. Finish up episode 5. And come back and enjoy what we have to say about the first 5 episodes of this beautiful series. So you were saying about the change of characters. What is my take on the, let's say, evolution of our main characters and how they were portrayed in the original series to this 97 series? It's interesting because I have noticed in some of the characters, and I'm not sure if it's just because, you know, it's a different age. It's supposed to be several years after the last episode of the original run of the X-Men series. Scott is a little softer. He's not as sure-footed as I felt he was in the original X-Men. Wolverine's about the same. I feel Wolverine's about the same. They've thrown a little more comic wit to him. Jubilee, I think, has been the most consistent as far as progression of characters. She was progressing in the original series, and she just feels like the same character from that series, and nothing has really changed with her, in my view. We can get into more. Gambit's gotten a little... I don't know what to say about Gambit. Beast is about the same.
Mm-hmm.
Storm. Yeah, Storm, I'd say, is about the same, too.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Maybe just a little more stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Jean's an interesting topic.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about Jean.
Yeah. They're bringing Sunspot in, but they really haven't done much with him yet.
No.
But I want to feel say he showed up in the original series at some point, and they forgot about that.
I don't even remember.
I don't recall either, but I
if he did, then I'll admit X-Men was a little spotty when I was young, so maybe if he did, probably more the back end of the end of the season, I would say maybe that's when they introduced Sunspot.
If anything, they were notorious for one thing, is just shoehorning characters in randomly.
Oh yeah. Yes,
so
they did.
It's like you know, you just watch something and like, okay, they'll be watching TV and talking, oh, the mutant's doing this and that, and you'd see like 500 characters just like run across the screen and go, oh, look, it's this one, this one, this one, this one, this one.
Yeah.
And 10 episodes later, that character shows up as a brand new character, even though you already saw them doing something completely different.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because consistency was not one of their strong points as far, and
especially at the end of the last season, where it got a little all over the place, got really weird.
The last season,
the last season,
we
was
almost
all,
want to say doesn't exist.
Yeah, it was all over the place. So I totally understand where you're coming from on that.
But that being said, I'm interested to see where they go with his character.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Magneto. Magneto, I feel, is a different character. He's the one that I'm like, that's the one I'm thinking I'm having the hardest time coping with.
Okay. Why do you say you have a hard time coping with Magneto, Magneto's character in this update season?
He just feels completely, almost not completely different, a lot different. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the voice actors changed. So, okay, so what? The animation style of the character is very drastically different.
Mm-hmm.
The face is different. The facial structure is different. The some of the mannerisms, the costume is completely different. Story wise, okay, I initially did not sit well with me, but as things have moved along and they've revealed more about what they're doing with this series, it's kind of okay. I can see this being Magneto. Okay, I get this, where this is going. The love story part is like that. I think that's kind of offsetting for me.
Interesting.
And maybe not for what you think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, if I remember correctly, there was at some point, we said there's spoilers, so. There was a romantic interest between Rogue and Magneto at some point, if I remember correctly, in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that Gambit's completely oblivious to it, and whenever he does realize it's happening, is still kind of like, it bothers him, but it doesn't.
Well, you know what? I kind of get where Gambit is. It sucks when you're kind of like in the third wheel. Like, I don't know if we ever had that situation I've never been in a love triangle, but I don't know. But I think we've always had that situation where you're attracted to this girl, right? And you have you have a good chemistry. You're friends, yeah. Maybe, right? And you're trying to get with her. Then comes this guy who is maybe a lot better looking than you, a lot more well-educated than you, a lot more well-rounded than you, coming in to take your girl. Well, that's situation that I feel like ex. Gambit's in right now.
It's her old. It's the old flame coming back again.
Oh, that's even worse. Because right. now it's that ex, because now they have that history together.
Exactly.
And now you're trying to be the new guy. And then the girl keeps on inviting this new guy in. And this guy's trying to get back with your... the ex is trying to get back with
your honey.
With your honey. The person that you're dating right now. But it kind of sucks right now, even though... Well, it doesn't suck, because when you are Remy LeBeau, you're basically Southern attractive. You talk French. You basically have almost supermodel looks. You look good yourself. You can basically get every woman on the planet. Instead, you choose to stick with Rob.
I don't really understand. Brought back the belly shirts.
Yeah, I wish you rock a crop top better than any man. You have perfect six pack abs.
Yep.
But. At that same time, I understand, because you are kind of taking on Magneto, that feels like who has looks of like an older, more sophisticated Bon Jovi right now, who can kind of...
Yeah, you know what?
Let's be honest, can pretty much sweep your girl off your feet and has done... And it has a electrifying personality, if you say so myself. So I get it. Like it is like, listen, Rogue has two attractive options. Let's just say that, yeah. You know, in that situation. But to kind of like what I will say, going back to the characters and how they changed up, I do agree with certain things. One of the characters that I felt needed to have more respect put on him was Cyclops. I feel like Cyclops, for the longest period of time, has been put down as being a little bit of this, I guess call him a little bit of this whiny, little upbeat, a little uptight of a character, and really has never really had the option to really stretch out his abilities, especially his concussion blast abilities, which people think they're laser beams or concussion blasts. Like, they don't cut through anything. Well, I mean, I think they do have the ability if you wanted to. They can, but they really concuss. They really kind of just push things back. Like, they really just do that. When the first episode dropped, to me, my X-Men, and how Cyclops came in, reintroduced himself using those concussion blasts to move around, showed his fighting skills, show his dabbing. I'm like, this is the Cyclops that the world needed to see. This is the Cyclops I felt like needed to get his respect, especially in that episode when the jet got destroyed and that Sentinel popped out of nowhere, which I was really confused about. I guess Sentinels do fly. And then he cuts down the Sentinel and everybody's falling. He's like, and then Rogue and Storm have to catch everybody. But Scott Summers is like, good job, team. And then he just dives in and uses his sled to land on it. I was like, this is the Scott Summers. This is the stand on business energy I needed the world to see, a Scott, man. And I was very excited until episode 2 came around, And then he went on to being Corny Scott. And then I got very disappointed with him. And I was like, what in the Helen Keller are you doing, man? I am trying to defend you and the internet. And then you're going back to being that Scott again. So not all of it could be done, but at least the first episode showed the ability of what Scott Summers can be a little bit. And again, we still have 5 more episodes, so hopefully that does change up a little bit. But yes, I thought Cyclops on the first episode did get a better representation of his powers. Another character I think also had two characters like a better showing. I think Storm. I think finally, especially with this series, again, knowing the fact that this is made by fans and people that love the comic book, I think they really let these characters really show what they really could do with their mutant powers. And the fact, I think, how the Sentinels are starting to acknowledge the Omega level powers that most of these characters can have. Like, mm-hmm. They show that, no, this is what we can do when we're on leash. Like, we've been keeping it down. Like, and I think that's aided with the fact with technology and what you can do with animation and things you can do. I think maybe back in the 90s, you were a little bit more limited. I remember back in the 90s, there was a time where you had to draw these characters out sketch by sketch, little by little.
Yep.
So by then, there was limitations. Now, with everything being done on the computer, I think you're allowed to push those limitations and be able to actually take what those characters were in the comic books about their superpowers and really push it up a notch. I think, like, when you saw Storm be able to show, when that moment she turned that world, turned the ground to glass because of everything and be able to turn into shards, destroy the Sentinels, I thought that was a masterclass to show her abilities and powers. Same thing with Magneto in the second episode, where she took the Executioner and the rest of that council all the way up to the air. It's like, this is what I can do to you if you push me. I think these were moments where they were showing the ability and the strength of the X-Men. Even Gambit had even a great moment in episode 5, which really showed the press of her power, really showed his power, really, really demonstrated his power. So the fact that they were able to push that limit, I thought, was incredible in that. Jubilee, I think, also finally, you know, I also got a little bit more, she got a little bit more violent. I don't know. She's really more into... I don't know if she's into the danger room a lot. She's really into punching things. And at her age, I know back in the comic books, she was kind of like the main focus in terms of being the young mutant who's discovered. Now she's really accepting of being a mutant and stuff like that. I thought that was really well done. We got a little bit of Bishop. Not so much. You know, Bishop was like, hey, I'm here.
I don't know. He's going to be around more often. Maybe not.
No, I got to go back to my timeline once his collar got fixed up. So he got set. But, you know, for a little bit of what we got about Bishop, I thought that was pretty cool in terms of his power set.
I enjoyed watching Bishop.
Yeah.
They're doing a lot more fluidity with the cast of characters, which is, again, very... present in the comic books, wasn't so present in the early original run of the show. You know, you had your main characters and that was it. Mm-hmm. This, you know, they're pulling characters out. Characters are going different directions. Like, Storm is now hanging out with Forge and, you know, whatever's going on with that. I think I have an idea where that's heading, but I'm not positive yet. You know, the Jean Grey situation. It's Jean Grey. No, it's the clone. It's, you know,
okay, Madeline. Now it's Madeline Pryor.
Here's the actual Jean Grey and exploring how a relationship works whenever you think this is one person, it turns out to be somebody else. And that's a very weird conversation to have, and they're having it.
But I will give them credit. They are very creative in how they're doing that dynamic, especially the fact that where Jean Grey accused Scott of psychologically cheating R with Madeline Pryor for a month and that whole situation, which, by the way, I think originally that moment was what originally was supposed to be with the other psychic that was actually
introduced into,
no, not Psylocke. Wow. Her name is the All White. She basically always a what?
White Queen.
I think she has another name.
Emma Frost.
Thank you. Emma Frost. Yes. Because in the comics, they have a relationship and they did that thing.
Let's be honest.
In the
Scott,
situation
Scott has a thing
them.
For psychics.
I noticed that, which is a terrible thing. I don't know why you want to. I don't know why you would ever want to date a woman that wouldn't want to know what's inside your mind always. Like, that's just, that doesn't seem to work well for any man. Let alone Scott. I don't know why Scott would want to date women like that. Like, you, the last thing you need is your wife being inside of your head, like right now, of every move that you make. So, I think Scott needs a better choice of women. But I digress. Anyway, for dudes. But yeah, no, that's again. I will, like, 97 is a little bit soap opera-ish with a lot of the relationship entanglements that are happening within the show, but I think it fares well. Again, like I said, it's a more mature show, that and it's okay to have a little bit of this entanglement drama. And I think the writing has took another step up. I think some of the gems that were dropped in a lot of these episodes was incredible. Like Magneto, back to you said, I had my doubts on Magneto. I wasn't a big Magneto fan. I always looked at him as the bad guy. But this one feels very more multi-layered in terms of that character. And he made a great drop line in episode 2's. Like, he's like, and I might be paraphrasing, he's like, please do not let me, I think he said, please do make me fail you again or something like that. I messed up that line, but it was a great drop line, man.
Yeah. And like I said, the initial one, they brought him back at the beginning of episode 1 and then a little bit with episode 2 and things that were going on. I'm like, I'm not feeling this Magneto. Mm-hmm. But as things are progressing, episodes 3, 4, and 5, and you get like the layers of Magneto of, I don't want to be doing this, but I am doing this for my friend who died and asked this of me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this the best that I can. Don't make me regret it.
Yeah. Basically in that form, that's basically what he said, but it was a lot more very Shakespearean and how he dropped that line, and I was like, that's good writing. That is good writing.
And then going on to what he did in episode 5, which we don't know the fate of Magneto in episode 5.
Oh my god, episode 5.
Episode 5 blew my mind.
Let's talk about episode 5. Let's do it.
It started off, I'm like, okay, this seems like a nothing episode. I realized it's a longer episode. It's 42 minutes long versus the 22, 23 minutes of the other episodes. It started off, okay, it doesn't feel like anything's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just kind of, like, random things start happening. It's, okay, this is getting a little more interesting. And then they just, like, blow the doors open and start beating you over the head with a baseball bat.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of what it felt like. Honestly, I thought it was even a good episode. Was even, like you said, was like with all the love triangles that were happening throughout the entire episode.
Still,
with that alone, that was still very intriguing, and how Gambit really loves Rogue, but Rogue is kind of tied into setting a duty as being an example for what the X-Men can be. At the meantime, how Magneto is being sent from Genosha to be the representative of, to be their leader and their main representative, and needed to bring Gambit in, and needed to bring Rogue as the queen and put him in that relationship and that strife. I thought that was, again, that was spicy enough for itself. But then, like you said, heading into the third act, where, you know, Cable magically pops in out of nowhere. And, you know, before I jump into that, did you notice the Watcher?
No.
You didn't notice it. Go back to a scene. There's a sky scene. Pause it. If you pay attention, there's two, the Watcher is sitting there watching the events of Genoa happening before it goes down. Go back and check it out. You'll notice there are two, it's going to be on the left side of your screen, and you'll see a big ass head with with the cape and some two beady star eyes. The Watcher's there watching the events of everything going down before even Cable shows up. I didn't know that until somebody said that, and I took a bunch of, yeah, which is crazy. So the fact that even the Watcher is on that, no, that either means a couple of things, that the events of what's going to happen can't not be changed in time, or that time is still in effect, that, you know, maybe things can be rewritten and stuff like that. Because, like, right, the Watcher doesn't participate in anything. So the fact that they're introducing the Watcher right now shows you how connected 97 is going to be with the rest of the Marvel Universe. That the fact that they're throwing that character in.
Yeah. Ooh. Okay. I'm gonna have to go back, and I have to make a confession. I still haven't finished watching season two of What If.
Fair enough.
I will gladly go back and rewatch episode 5, even just for that small detail, but just to watch episode 5 again because of the amount of stuff that happened. Like you said, Cable just randomly showing up, seeing his mother, trying to do something with it not working out, trying to warn them. You know, the Sentinels, and just the carnage.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. It was such a bloodbath. And it was basically almost like a genocide, like that moment, no E for execution, safe. And nobody was safe. Everybody got brutally taken out. Again, for a show that doesn't show like gore or violence, just to be able to depict that horrible moment that just happened, but also depict the cool stuff that all of them did, especially with Gambit. And Magneto do it, just fighting everything. Like, even that moment where he had those flashbacks back to the day where he was a Holocaust survivor. To be able to put that in that, to feel like I'm back in this situation and to never again, and to try to do everything you get to stop that massive Sentinel, was an amazing moment on himself. I thought that was incredible, dude. I thought that was incredible.
Yes.
But that's only being topped by what Gambit did through this episode.
Gambit was always one of my favorite characters in the original series. Not quite as much this one because I just feel like we haven't seen him as much in 97. We are talking spoilers here. For to see him go down like that.
Oh yeah.
Like that's brilliant, and like heart wrenching at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And I I would admit I would have felt more devastated about that episode. How if I already knew that time travel was going to play an element, unfortunately. So I'll admit that moment, that the devastation and the more emotional element got kind of pulled back a little bit, knowing that X-Men does play around with that kind of stuff. So that doesn't mean it wasn't any less effective for that moment, because like you said, it just came out of nowhere and smacked you out of nowhere. And to see like the prediction of with Mallory Gray and Jean Grey, because they're sharing the same mind, for that to kind of pop out of nowhere, to have that devastation, really showed the true damage and change. And you do worry about what the kind of events that are going to lead into the next episode after seeing that, after everything that the X-Men have fought for in terms of the relationships with the UN and all that stuff, to see, okay, we finally have a utopia that we can build for us to be suddenly destroyed out of nowhere. It's going to set a lot of chains off for a lot of characters too, man.
Well, here's a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Something psychically attacked Jean and Madeline.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it is?
From what I'm guessing from, I feel like Mr. Sinister probably still has a big play into that. Again, now I don't know enough of X-Men lore. It could be another bigger player that's in part of that. But from the beginning, I would have said Mr. Sinister, just because this has been a particular villain that has a certain soft spot for the Summer family, if you will.
That's one way of putting it.
So I would say that, and the fact that Sinister is one of the more older mutants that has dissected other mutants for the sake of his longevity and his mortality, I would assume that those would be decisions that are being played. But I think you're alluding that there might be another player that we have not foreseen yet in X-Men 97 that's popped up. So, I would have said Mr. Sinister though.
Okay. It could be. I don't know.
Do you have a theory? You want to share that?
Strangely enough, I don't. I was thinking that somehow Cable was involved. It was between Cable or the Executioner, because it's the same special effect that they zapped Storm with that hit the two of them.
Yeah.
But there was no revelation or evidence to be the Executioner.
I don't know. I don't think it's the Executioner, though. No, I think the Executioner was a one-off. I wouldn't say one-off character, because he was a character from clearly the first episode that later on turned himself into the Executioner later on. It's episode two. So
there's a whole run with that character. That was it was a pretty big story arc.
Oh, I probably bet there was.
In the comics,
mm-hmm.
Which is what kind of brought Bishop in, and that's you know that whole line,
mm-hmm.
That's the Executioner songs run, and that doesn't seem like what they're doing. I don't think they're actually doing any specific one storyline. They're grabbing a whole bunch of things and kind of weaving into a beautiful tapestry.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because like you went into the Mojo verse with Jubilee and Sunspot. So that was their own little thing there. Then you have the Executioner at that one point.
And we touched
the whole Genosha.
And we touched on the Goblin Queen too. They brought the Goblin Queen Queen in for a little bit. Yeah. The whole situation. And did the Technodrome part. Yeah, it's throwing a lot of, like you said, a lot of arcs are being thrown in very quick. And for them to do it really quickly within 30-minute episodes is actually pretty quickly.
The writing's been pretty tight.
It's been very tight. to throw in a lot of stuff in at such a fast time. But like you do kind of wish that maybe there was a little bit more time to spread them out. That way you can maybe enjoy those arcs a little bit more.
Yeah.
But the way that they've been able to handle a lot of material and throw it in such a quick, short period of time has been very, very entertaining. Almost like another show, another comic book show that's kind of being aired. That's kind of taking the same, which I think the writers took the same playbook from. So I won't say this. We rock Disney here.
But I don't remember where I was going with this. But what was going on with Storm? I think we're revisiting that character from her past. Whenever she discovered her powers, when we first met Storm in Africa. I forget the character's name, kind of like a dreamwalker type of character.
Okay.
That's where I think we're going with that, which gives me very much like Mysterio vibes of how they're treating it.
Okay.
Like, you don't know what's real, what she, you know, is what she's seeing an illusion or in her head, or is it an actual, like a dream, or is it, you know, reality?
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they brought Forge in, I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, he's one that, you know, was never a huge character, but you could do stuff with him.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, I like how they're flexing the cast. They're not, you know, concrete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's our main five. That's it. No more, no less. We'll bring in somebody for an episode as a guest, kick him right out the next one. I don't know what was up with that psychic attack between the two of them.
No. I think it was about what happened in Genosha. I think that's probably what that psych attack was leading to. And maybe there was a warning from the future that was trying to sent them a warning from maybe the future that triggered off. That's what
I was thinking. I was thinking Cable was sending it to them.
Yeah.
Because Cable does have psychic powers.
Yes, that could also be it. I also noticed, I think this is based on Cable, the way that Cable kind of came in all sudden, it to me, it probably wasn't his first time trying to warn Mallory about what's happened ahead, which I'm thinking, and maybe this might be the next episode, I think we're going to take a look into Nathan, aka Cable's perspective, of him trying to go back in time. Like he's unfortunately he's having a Groundhog Day effect.
Yes.
Where he can't seem to get there in time to stop the adventure to Genosha, which eventually save the fallen lives of Magneto and Gambit in that particular episode. So I think we're gonna eventually see that point of view of Cable just trying to get it right to stop the events that were happening. To go back to what you're saying about Storm, I was a little disappointed in how they end up like, oh, we have nothing for you to do, Storm. So we're just going to take away your powers, being one of the most powerful characters right now in Mutants. Yep. And we're just going to take your powers away. And now you have to go on this hero's journey to get your powers back. So I was a little disappointed about it, but at least it kind of gives Storm some material to do outside without the X-Men. Morph, like you said, I think is a clever money strategy in a way that we don't want to include every bleeping X-Men character ever made, so we're just going to make it through more hard, and we're going to save money that way, hey, and versus bringing every character back. But it also is a reminder that all those characters do exist in the world. Yep. So I think that's very a very clever way of doing that. And I think you got some really cool cameos too. You saw Dazzle. I think you saw Dazzler in there. You saw that weird fat alien kid that's that you can see through, and he's just his eyes. That's his only I think he was a part of the New Mutants though, but that's his only power.
Yeah, that was a character I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah, he's a weird character, but that's his only mutant power. It's just that's it. I'm translucent.
I'm literally,
I'm just fat and translucent, which is a weird scape of powers though. But other than that, we may have touched on everything though. But yeah, just a lot of good stuff in there. Also, I don't know if you remember, also in the Genosha thing, if you pay attention to one moment where I think it's before Gambit just tries to destroy it, the main creator is actually, they actually drew the main creator in that moment. It's a little Easter egg. If you also pay attention to that.
Drew the what they put in there?
Yeah, they animated B.O.D. Mayo in there for a split second too, if you pay attention. Yeah, the guy with the glasses that ready to get blown up, he's in that. Yeah, they he's a little Easter egg before he gets blown up. Oh, it's nice. A quick second, but yeah.
Okay. One thing I do want to touch on is people are curious about the voice cast. They brought back as many as they could.
Mm-hmm.
Storm is now. See, here's kind of where it gets a little fuzzy, because in the original series, they didn't always use the same. Half this run was one voice actor, and they switched it halfway through. But for all intents and purposes, Allison Seeley Smith, who was Storm for a good chunk of the original run, is back. Mm-hmm. Cal Dodd, who was Wolverine the entire run, is back.
Yeah.
Lauren Zahn, who was Rogue, I think for most, if not all, of the original run, is back as Rogue. So is George Buzza as Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else is someone different.
Okay. Yeah, I did hear. Especially, and like you said, Wolverine came back too. You definitely see a lot more of the gravitas of Wolverine than what he was back in the day. Like, again, not everybody's voice will translate perfectly. This was a cartoon that aired 30 years ago. Things are going to change. Things are going to be a little different, though. But, you know, again, it's nice to see a lot of these older characters are back. These older actors coming back to reprise their characters is such a nice touch to the nostalgia factor to it. So, yeah, really cool.
And as just a quick side note, because it's interesting, Jennifer Hale, who voices Jean Grey in Madeline Grey, who can also be heard across on the Star Wars side as, let me look at this name here, Senator Kirchi, Commander Guild Senator on The Bad Batch. And if you really want to have more fun with it, she is the voice of Cinderella.
Oh, look at that. Very nice.
She actually has a very impressive resume, doing stuff in Diablo 5, Mortal Kombat 1, Ninja Super Heroes. She's quite the talent, and does quite a bit of work.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that aside, so just give credit to our amazing voice talents that are appearing, giving us this wonderful performance in this wonderful show. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
No. I think we've touched on everything I can think of, man. So far, brilliant series.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what the next 5 episodes bring us. So Isaac, thank you for coming back. Thank you for enlightening us as always. Your brother's show,
Yes. So for the people out there, like I said, my brother and I also do a podcast where we sit down and talk about video game culture in a hopefully more funny and hopefully in a more enlightened way, pretty much with everything out there. It's called Backseat EXE with your boy Isaac, aka Afromania, my brother Mike Gott. So I hope that you guys have an opportunity to look at that. We'll share, definitely like, share, and subscribe that as your lovely uncle and, you know, my brother. We talk about all that good stuff. So yeah, take a look at it.
All right, we'll definitely have to check it out. If you're not listening, please make sure you do check it out. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Make sure to join the conversation again. Let us know what you think of X-Men 97 on the social medias. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's pretty much everywhere at WD Magicast. Well, thank you for your time, for your consideration. You know, the fact that you spend some of your time with us over here at the WD Magic family really means a lot to me and to all of us here. Thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Just please let other people know. Go on to Apple iTunes, go on to Spotify, give us a rating review. We have all 5-star reviews at the moment. Keep them coming. We need more, because the more reviews that we get, particularly of the 5-star value, the more those channels will promote our show and help grow the family as well. Or link out on social media so other people know. Check out the latest episode of WD Magicast, because the more people, the better. Walt believed in a big Disney family, and so do I. Don't forget to subscribe to the show while you're at it. This way you always know when new episodes are posted. You can do this on your favorite podcast, or we're pretty much everywhere. And don't forget to check out our merchandise shop again, where you get yourself some really cool stuff. Links to the social media and to the merchandise shop are in the show notes as well. Because remember, this show is brought to you by listeners like you. Whatever you're facing out there, whatever demons are chasing you, whatever is weighing you down, don't give up. You are special. You are someone that's unique and of value. You are important to this world and to other people. Don't ever forget that. And sometimes it may be very difficult to believe that, but you are here for a reason. You are loved. You are cherished. Somebody out there needs you. You may not have met them yet, you may not know of them yet, or you may never know, but you will make a difference in someone else's life. Never give up, never give in. Let your light shine for the entire world to see. And if you need help, just ask. Someone is there, waiting and willing to help you. I'd like to end this week's show with a quote from Walt Disney himself. When people laugh at Mickey Mouse, it's because he's so human. And that is the secret to his popularity. Again, that's Walt Disney. Thank you again for listening, everyone. And I'll see you next time.